The year was 1943 when Harold G. Songer, president and curator of the Vermilion County War Museum in Danville, was drafted into the U.S. Army.
Harold, better known as Sparky, works here as a volunteer. He's a war veteran and lifelong military man committed to providing a place where both the young and old can learn or reflect on war history. Seldom does a day go by when Sparky doesn't recall the bloodiest days of World War II.
Surrounded by war memorabilia and dressed in a jacket similar to the one he wore when the Battle of the Bulge broke on December 16, 1944, he recalls the final days of that surprise attack by the Germans in Belgium, deep in the Ardennes forest.
When the Battle of the Bulge opened up, they knocked out our division in 3 days' time. And we fought until we ran out of everything, and Colonel Cavender came up in the morning of the 19th, and I remember it very well, and he asked us if we wanted to fight to the finish or surrender. We said we'd fight to the finish because he had no communication from our headquarters. He didn't know what to do either. He said, destroy and tear up your weapons. The rifle, you could pull it back and take the pin out of it and throw it away. But they were gas-loaded cylinder, and he had a clip that went up inside. So you take the clip out and strip the shells out, throw them away. But a lot of the guys forgot about that one in the chamber already there. And during frustration and everything, you'd take the end of the barrel and slam it up against a tree. And when they did, it was one hell of a commotion, screaming. They'd shoot themselves right through the stomach. So they were dropping. We were yelling. We just had about 6 weeks of infantry training before we went over. My sergeant had just got killed right beside of me, and I hit the ground, and I raised my head, and the sniper hit a spoon I had in my pocket. Why I had it, I'll never know, because it had nothing to eat with it. We were just eating K rations at the time. But it bent the spoon, as you can see. That's where it hit. And the lead portion of the bullet dropped in my pocket. And after we surrendered and the Germans searched us, whatnot, they took the lead portion of the bullet, kept it, and gave me back the spoon. That's the only thing I had to eat with when we got in prison camp. After they marched us out of the woods, put us up in the barn lot for the night, and we just stomped all night long trying to keep warm. My feet were so wet and so cold. Everybody was. It wasn't just me. But I found some fence that had been partially tore down. I was going to push it down and make a hammock. Get up on it and stretch out. I felt a gun next to my temple. And I looked over and some guard was screaming at me and made me get down. So I did, as told. But it dawned on me when I was cutting my grass one afternoon. That son of a buck saved my life. I could have laid there on that fence, froze to death. And never have known a thing about it. That's the way you go when you freeze. Next day, they marched us down to some rail line and put us in boxcars. We had to work on a railroad. The railroads were always being bombed, and they shipped in a bunch of railroad ties, and they wanted us to stack them. In doing so, we had to walk to camp. We had nothing for breakfast, had nothing for lunch. We got a little bowl of rutabaga soup in the evening, and that was all. You slept with your clothes, same clothes you worked in. You had no heat in the barracks. You had no running water. You had no facilities. You were fighting the lice. Everybody had it. You had frozen feet. Some was frostbitten so badly that they had to be removed. On Christmas Eve, they took us into Stalag 4B. You had to do exactly as they told you. They didn't particularly care where you lived or died. In my case, a German guard who thought that I had taken his briefcase and possibly his sandwich, I had nothing to do with it. But the Czech guard who was with him told him that he had hit it, and they both laughed after beating me, almost breaking my back. Needless to say, I had to go back to work like the rest of them. And consequently, over the years, I've had 4 back operations, 2 fusions. So things don't go away. You live with them daily. They put us on more trains, and while I was unloading my portion of the coal car, a German guard, well, he was down looking under these coal boxcars, and I got down and I was looking, and the guards kept saying, defueler. I could see a figure in the porthole. It looked like Hitler. After that, we were notified by our guards that the rations were coming in, which we knew. They'd ask us if we had anything we wanted to send to the laundry, and they'd have it back to us that evening. They wanted to make us look clean and presentable. We were totally exhausted. We said we'd stay here in the barn tonight. We could hear the rations coming in. They were dropping bombs. So the next morning, another fellow, and I always thought his name was Lamb from Mississippi, but I'm not sure. Him and I just opened up the barn door because we got up before everybody else, I guess, and looked out on the hillside, and there was a young German officer there with a pair of binoculars watching the Russians blow up Dresden. We just walked over to him and nonchalantly, and I said, Amerikaner, das war ja, and that's much German as I remember. He says, yeah, about 140 miles. He says, a long way to Tipperary, isn't it? I said, you speak English? Yes, I went to University of Michigan, and I came over to visit my family, and I got drafted in. He said, just go through the woods. Don't get on the highway. And he says, about 140 miles. Good luck. And says, see you. So we just kept on walking.